Dangote, see the fine money. No level.
It's Kelpie Vibes.
Hello, and welcome to this conversation about hip hop and its manifestations across Sub-Saharan and North Africa. My name is Max Bone, and I will be serving as your host on this podcast. I am a student at the Elliott School of International Affairs, where I study international politics and African studies. Today, I am joined by Matthew Kim.
Hi.
He is also a junior at the Elliott School of International Affairs, where he studies African studies. Interestingly, Matthew also served 2 years in the South Korean military. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi.
Additionally, we are joined by Ibrahim Dahab. While he is from Chad, he has lived in multiple countries around the world. He is a junior at the Elliott School of International Affairs, studying economics in Africa. Glad to have you here, Ibrahim.
Thank you very much, Max.
So, as we begin our conversation about hip-hop in Africa, I'd like to turn to you, Matthew. You have a very unique upbringing, having grown up in both South Korea and South Africa, and having lived in the United States as well. So, with your unique perspective and your extensive experience in the southern region of Africa, I'm curious if you could elaborate a little bit on what you found during the course of your research on the hip-hop in South Africa.
Yeah, well, as you said before, I'm originally from South Korea. I've lived in South Africa for 8 years, and I realized that South Korean hip-hop is more focused on, like, not social and political commentary, but focusing on, like, just the lyrics, just having fun, or like party girls and all that stuff. Focus more on that kind of perspective, while I realized South African hip hop is more, there are like good songs that has like a social and political commentary.
I'm curious, you mentioned that. I'm curious if you could give an example.
Yeah, for example, like this is an old song, but one of my favorite South African hip hop song is Never Again by Prophets of the City. This song was performed by Prophets of the City right after the apartheid. And there's very, so the song commemorates how like Nelson Mandela ended apartheid and gives this pan-African voice saying, oh, Africa, rejoice, raise your feasts, raise your voice. Africa, bring the noise because you've got to make the choice. Like the rhyming and it celebrates the end of apartheid, which I really liked. And it gives like South Africa such like a utopian view now since like Mr. Oppressor, which is the apartheid regime, is gone.
Well, I'm curious. I'd like you to elaborate on that in a certain extent, because this song was written in the 90s after the termination of apartheid. And before we move on to Ibrahim, I'm curious, what do you think this song means for South Africa today? Because polling from Afrobarometer and recent local election results in South Africa actually demonstrates that a significant amount of South Africans feel that the political party, the ANC, that led them away from apartheid has actually betrayed them. So I'm curious if you think the lyrics of the song, which are very powerful and profound, could have some sort of impact and manifestation in South Africa today.
Well, I think it's unfortunate because, like, every South African, I feel like, had, like, a really, like, a utopian view after the end of apartheid. But obviously, like, 20, 25-odd years later, and we are in ANC, still, like, dominating country, and South Africa did not have any, like, transition of power, a peaceful transition of power from ANC to different party. So I always say ANC isn't, like, a Nelson Mandela bubble where they take too much pride of being the descendants of Nelson Mandela and refuse to change or anything, which causes South Africa to be such a divided nation. So I think the song, the lyrics itself is very like utopian, very idealistic view, but it doesn't really necessarily reflect the current South African situation, because I honestly believe that current South African situation is really divided and not.
I'd just like to see some clarification, because I'm pretty sure I know what you said, but I just want to make sure none of our listeners misinterpret it. When you said that the ANC is very much a Nelson Mandela bubble, that by no means is discounting the monumental work that Nelson Mandela and the ANC did It is very much that they are leaning back upon what they have done in the past in order to justify their shortcomings today. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's the case.
Perfect. That's what I was sure. I just wanted to make sure because I think that's very important. So now, Ibrahim, while you are from Chad, you have lived all over the world. You have grown up in multiple countries, and you are very much a Pan-Africanist.
Yes,
I with your identity. So you bring a very unique perspective to this conversation. So I'm curious if you could just talk about your overall views and what your perception is on hip-hop in sub-Saharan Africa, particularly in some Arabic-speaking countries, and where you see it going from here.
Well, hip-hop, for one, its history is deeply ingrained in the revolutions that took place in Africa in the early 1960s, 70s, 80s, and so on. At this time, there was a lot of colonial remnants in many of the African countries. For example, from where I'm from, Chad, French remnants and neocolonialism and other topics and stuff like that. And Africans, they found a fascination with hip-hop because of I guess, it gives you a way to discuss your struggles on a day-to-day basis. For example, its origins in like the New York City, Harlem areas where people are talking about day-to-day struggles, crime, drugs, poverty, and all of this. It gave them a method to express themselves. And Africans took fondly to that because they were also going through a lot. For the most part, there were numerous dictators, oppressive dictators, very violent ones, oppressing their people. There was no jobs for the youth. There was high rates of poverty, disease, mismanagement of resources and whatnot. So I guess hip hop for Africans was an extension to what African Americans were utilizing it, and that it gave them a method to express themselves.
I'd like to dig into this a little bit deeper with you, Ibrahim. You mentioned that it played a very large role in the movements for independence in the later half of the 20th century. But you also mentioned how it started in Harlem. So many scholars find that the beats and whatnot that originated in Harlem at the outset of hip-hop actually came from West Africa.
True.
For instance, the griots in Mali and Senegal. So I'm curious why you think that this sort of music was able to manifest itself as a form of social commentary in both sub-Saharan Africa and in the U.S. at this period of history.
Well, also in my research, I found that not only was it directly, impacted by African ancestry and in terms of music, beats, and whatnot from West Africa. But even migration periods, for example, of the Jamaicans into New York during the early 1920s, 30s, 40s, it also had a big impact on the hip-hop music scene. So you see that it evolves as depending on the population, I would say. And especially in New York, I know that there was a lot of immigrants there, and the immigrants played a big role in evolving hip-hop itself. And in sub-Saharan Africa, like I said, they just adapted to this music that allows people to express themselves openly. They relate to a lot of the struggles. While I would say that Africans probably had it worse than African Americans did, because in America, there's still an opportunity for you to make it out one way or another because the opportunities are present. Whereas in Africa, it's really, really complicated, and it's a lot more difficult than that. And if you don't have connections and whatnot, it's like mostly impossible.
Absolutely. That's very profound. And that same sentiment is very much manifesting itself in recent years. One has to look at what occurred in Senegal not too long ago with Abdoulaye Wade and his ouster from office, the revolution that removed Blaise Compaoré in Burkina Faso. So another aspect that I've come across in my research on hip-hop in sub-Saharan Africa is how it very much serves as a mechanism for marginalized groups to express themselves. One instance that I became very interested in myself was Keiko, a rapper from Uganda, who very much delivered a sharp rebuke to queer, to homophobia, and to sexism in Uganda through her music, and she faced some consequences for that. So I'm curious if in your research you have come across any instances of hip-hop being used as a way for either marginalized, oppressed, or minority voices to express themselves in Southern Africa and Chad and around Africa as a whole.
Yeah.
I'll start with you, Matthew.
Yeah, there are two cases of that. The first case was that this was actually like 10 years ago, but Ben Sharpa's Hegemony. This song was about talking about the police, the white police brutality to the black population.
Mm.
It was really interesting because I feel like this was kind of like similar to how the American police brutality is towards the black population. The lyrics are very interesting. It says, "Oh, like why do we have a police protection service when their duty is to snatch me and arrest my persons?" So it's very.
Those are the lyrics of the song.
Yeah, those are
wow.
The lyrics of the song. And it represents the marginalized black population of South Africa. And the second case is where like there's a South African woman like there's a strong movement of queer woman like hip hop artists who represent like homosexuality and who calls like men they're like quote unquote like side bitches. Questioning like the hyper like masculinity of hip hop, which is also like very interesting.
And I found the point that you mentioned about police brutality and its international connections very interesting. For instance, I was in Israel a few weeks ago, and while there, I met with Ethiopian Israelis who were very much themselves on the front line against police brutality. So I feel that maybe in a future instance we could dig into how hip-hop has been used to combat police brutality around the world, because I find it absolutely fascinating and could be a very unique case study. But now moving on to Ibrahim, would you like to add anything to what Matthew said?
Well, I know that in Africa, there was the emergence, in sub-Saharan Africa, West Africa, there's the emergence of hip-hop artists like Sarkodie in Ghana, and then P-Square, for example, in Nigeria. So all these people were introducing a new version of hip-hop, I guess, that was infused with African, more traditional African beats, rhythms, and local tribal languages. So it's a very good infusion, in my opinion.
Well, that's really interesting because a very unique aspect of hip-hop in Africa is that it is in the local language most of the time. But other times it's not, but it's... Oh, at least a combination of two, and because hip-hop is very much people expressing their identity and where they come from, that is a great way that can help us distinguish hip-hop from other forms of African music that may have been imposed on these areas at some point. Would you like to add something, Matthew?
Yeah, it's like how like Ghanaian artists, like they may be very fluent in English, but to themselves, or when they perform their music, they speak Pidgin English.
Absolutely.
Or like the local language.
For sure. So as we are getting to the point where, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up this fascinating conversation, I'm curious if either of you have anything that you would like to add in closing about your overall research, what you see happening in the future, or what's something that you really hope that listeners take away from this conversation?
So to start off with me, I realized, like, for example, like my research based on South African hip hop is there are a lot of good songs that relates with social and political commentary of people. And these songs are easily listened to because this is hip hop. It's really catchy and the lyrics rhymes, good rhythm. So I hope that especially South Africa is going through like a really like a political and economic turmoil, I hope South African hip-hop artists more perform songs that has a social and political commentary.
Ibrahim, do you have anything?
Well, one thing that always comes up whenever I conduct research on hip-hop is that it's constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
People have to accept the fact that it's constantly evolving. What's being created and produced now is not the same as what was being produced in the 1960s, 1970s, in that era of time. And people need to adapt to that fact, you know? And whenever we have new artists that come and that are influenced largely by hip hop, and then people try to discredit them and say, oh no, this new era is trash, or they don't emulate hip hop culture as it was in the 1960s and 1950s. We need to accept the fact that there's an evolution, and it will only continue to evolve more and more. And yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Ibrahim and Matthew. The point that you just left off on, Ibrahim, I think that is very important, because right now Africa is going through a very transitional period. You look at Algeria, you look at Sudan, you look at Uganda, the elections that occurred in Nigeria.
Yes.
There's a lot going on, and I think that someone would be foolish not to acknowledge the role that hip-hop will play. So thank you both very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Max.
This is Nigeria. Where am I, Madam Philomena? Money vanish for your office, 36 million, you tossing an anima. This is Nigeria. Never any recession. When looters and killers and stealers are still contesting election. Politicians with thieves, some billion and billion, you know they go prison. Police station they close by 6. Security reason.